75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, here we are with the UFO Files, and I don't know, it's a pretty nice week for Thanksgiving, Larry Dickin.
Yeah.
I mean, weather-wise.
A little cool, but appropriate for this time of year.
I don't know if the ETs like turkey. I know they like cattle.
Sometimes they like people, I've heard.
Well, we've done several shows like that. It's a fellow who, the first time I ever heard that theory about human mutilations was a guy named Bill English, who lives out in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And that was like 10 years ago, and I haven't talked to him since then. I hope he's okay.
Haven't heard of him since.
Huh? Right. We had a little fun with the UFO magazine article we wrote for January. Thanks for giving me an opportunity. And I don't know. Basically these things are really, conjecture. Even from the government standpoint, I'm afraid. We talk about they know everything. I'm not so sure.
I'm not so sure they know everything either. I think they may think they do, but as we were discussing a little while ago, I think that we want to know why the ETs are visiting us. You know, the bottom line gets down to the one law of biological life in the universe is that life wants to continue its existence. It wants to survive, and everything else grows out of that, including culture and society and civilization. And so we can assume that they're probably here because they have some interest in surviving as a species. I don't think they're here for our spiritual enhancement or development per se, although that may tail into helping them survive.
You mentioned the word culture. We got an interesting email this week from someone who asked about the culture of the Greys.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I immediately thought, I think of culture is, classical music or jazz, rock and roll, or Playboy magazine. And I have yet to understand, but I do have a hunch that there are some extraterrestrials out there holding their iPods listening to the show. Or maybe I'm dreaming.
There may be, Jerry.
A little marketing expertise there, perhaps. Reach beyond this world.
We did have a very interesting inquiry from Mr. Frederick Mayfield, and I didn't catch exactly where Frederick lives, but, in terms of what city or what country, but... this is in response to him. I sent him back an answer to his question. And basically, he wanted to know whether there was any source of information about what the culture of the Greys is. Does anybody have any books, online articles, etc. about this? And... there's an answer to that, but it's certainly not, it's not like there's an ET Bible sitting out there just waiting on the internet for everybody to read. But let me just relate what I told Frederick, because it is a very interesting question. Ultimately, we would certainly be interested in their culture, as they might be and seem to be interested in ours. So I told Frederick, I'm not aware of any scientific or even layman's research that has been performed on even anecdotal information that might be retrieved from interviewing abductees, which would provide you or me or anybody else with any substantial physical evidence or recorded dialogue to support writing this, quote, book or report and putting it out on the internet on the cultures and societal behaviors of the Greys or any other ET species that might be visiting us. There are several books or e-books available that purport to document the cultural aspects of various ET societies based on intuitive and channeled, which are two different processes, knowledge imparted to the authors. And we have one example out on our site. We did an interview a number of months ago with a fellow out in the West Coast who goes by the name George L. And you'll find that. You can go to our guest page and look for George's picture in our guest list. And it says George L. Click on that. And you can read about his opinions, and he's got a whole ebook out on a website that you can reference. And we have a great interview with Jerry, of course, there with Mr. George. And this is an example of this type of information that can be examined and considered by all of our listeners. I can't prove the perceptions of the individuals are wrong, but without having verifiable records or personal recorded testimony available to us in any form from various ET species that are reported to be visiting us, I can't disprove this alternative either. We need real validated input, and then we can let cultural anthropologists loose on the information, and they can document their research and opinions and put it out on the internet. Interestingly, the hearsay evidence of anonymous and sometimes not so anonymous U.S. government intelligence sources has revealed a device and a document that reveal the culture, beliefs, and behaviors of at least one ET species identified by the sources as EBENs, or extraterrestrial biological entities. Are these the classic Greys reported in abductions? Some people say yes, others say no. Do they come from Zeta Reticuli 1 or 2, since it's a double star system, both presumably having planets? Some say yes and some say no. Some say that they come from other solar systems. These ETs gave us, supposedly, a crystal cube that displays holographic, I'm presuming here, images of life on the ET world, as well as the history of their past interactions with humans on Earth. And it even goes further than that, because they call it the history of the universe. This device, unfortunately, seems to only be usable when you have an ET holding it. Human beings, if they hold it, nothing happens. Now, also, fortunately, I guess, for us, they gave us a printed book, which is called The History of the Universe, and it is called by our government sources the Yellow Book. A recent rumor was that it was that I was copied on specified that several non-original copies of this book were planted in at least one and possibly more public libraries in the United States. The original copy purportedly is kept at Los Alamos National Labs. You can reference this story about the Yellow Book and the ET connection and the crystal cube, etc., on our Aviary page on our website. And you can find that again on the guest page, or there's also a reference on our UFO files page menus to insider disclosure and the aviary section is there. And also this particular story is documented in Robert Collins's book, Exempt from Disclosure, that you can order there on the aviary page. The same yellow book is also part of Dan Burrish's story, interestingly enough.
Yeah, but that's a little different twist.
Right. Except the ETs, in this case, are not another species from somewhere else in the galaxy, per se, although they do inhabit planets in other locations, Zeta Reticuli being one, and some star system in the constellation Orion. In other words, there are two different species involved here, but they are both future versions of our own species that split apart after some catastrophic event in the near term, i.e. related to 2012. And they've come back in time to try to fix the problems that caused everything to happen in the first place. And they also have a crystal cube and a yellow book, interestingly enough.
You talk about these things. I don't know if a yellow book exists or not. I guess it would be out at Los Alamos. At least that's where it was at one time, right?
Well, that's where it was at one time. We actually don't know where it is at this point. As I said, you know, this rumor that a few copies were made and distributed at least in one public library, which happened to be located in Cincinnati, which isn't that far from Wright-Patterson and up in Dayton. That's strictly a rumor, and we don't know where there is a yellow book.
You talk about a lot of things happening, in the UFO field, a lot of nuances these days, in addition to just sightings reports, which we have some interesting ones on the show here later, folks. I don't really know what to make of some of it, and I guess no one really does. That's one reason we find this subject so enticing, is there's so many avenues that you could pursue. The time travel angle seems to be getting more popular these days. Have you noticed?
I've noticed. My own personal opinion is it's time travel is something that is an aspect of moving oneself around in space-time in this reality. And, you know, when you go from one point in the universe to another that's very far apart, in essence, you're going to be doing time travel, both to get there and to get back. And, the ideal situation is that if you leave here for some other point in the universe, that when you come back, basically, either very little time has passed or none at all is the ideal situation. And physics today, the new modern physics, seems to indicate that such things are possible.
You know, we get into these nuances in the UFO field, and we talk about that, but the huge majority of our audience around the world, this is a subject that they just check into occasionally and check out. You know, a good piece of fiction like Whitley's The Grays or some movie that gets their attention. I saw an interesting documentary this week, and we're advertising it. We're one of the people that one of the exclusive places where you can get it, Fast Walkers.
Right.
Robert Miles, Bruce Jessup production.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Miles did the technical stuff on it. This is a very, very interesting and very well done DVD. Actually, it's a documentary made in high definition, and down in Sholo, Arizona, where Miles lives, Robert Miles, they're going to show it in the theater there on December 13th.
Right.
In high definition. And I imagine they'll be doing that somewhat around the country through 07. That's not new, exactly. Of course, the Phoenix Lights documentary was shown in several theaters. and the one that Dr. Lynn did.
Right.
And then, of course, Linda, the production down in Dallas with Jim Mars, Linda Cowan.
Right.
The Secrets of Redgate, that's been shown in theaters.
Right.
My point is that you start, and the reason I like this Fast Walkers DVD documentary is that it's so well done technically. It's as good as anything I've seen anywhere. Especially, it rivals what you might see on a 60 Minutes documentary, or maybe This Week, or whatever show. You know, you pick one of them. I mean, it's a very professional caliber. And it basically lays out the entire UFO story in a way with all the researchers, many of them at least, not all of them, in a way in which it was edited, the content's very good.
Mm-hmm.
I'd recommend people, if they get a chance, to either buy the DVD or go see the movie. And if they want to buy it, they can get it at shopjerrypippin.com. What a coincidence.
Yeah, and certainly there's a link where you can go and not only, you know, take a look at the preview of the movie, you can also listen to some interviews that we'll have posted very shortly with the producers, and that's always interesting.
Yeah, that'll be coming up on Thanksgiving week, too.
Right, and there's a link right there, you know, right above where our show, new shows are listed each week on the UFO Files Report. You know, right above that is the link to take you to the page where you can watch and listen about this new movie and new DVD.
Well, I recommend it highly. And I've already seen it. You haven't yet.
Right. Well, I'll be seeing it.
In fact, I'm one of the few people that's
seen it. I'll be seeing it sometime this week, as soon as it comes,
yeah.
Yes.
But, well, I put it in the mail to you. It's the check's in the mail. The DVD's in the mail.
You're right. The check is more important. You know, another thing that that happened this week, sort of out of the blue, really, literally, that's the name of another DVD that we have a link to out there. It's also very good, but it was produced several years ago. But this literally, you know, a phone call out of the blue, inquiring about something that, you know, we have out on our website. It's the story of Kecksburg, and there's a mention there in interviews that you did for the 40th anniversary celebration last fall, an interview with Stan Gordon and also with Leslie Kane, who is also working with the, forgive me if I got the initials wrong here, the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and I think that's what CFI is, stands for. I know I got the last part right. But at any rate, she works with them.
I think you're correct.
Right. And, of course, Ron Podesta, Bill Clinton's ex, what did he do in the White House?
He was actually, he wasn't chief of staff, I don't think, but he was an advisor, top advisor in the White House.
Right. I mean, he was on
and you said Ron, it's John.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say Ron?
I thought you did.
I meant to say John, but perhaps it came out wrong. But at any rate, the you know, we have those interviews out there on the Kecksburg page on our site, and there is a mention there of the fact that CFI had, in conjunction with with support of the Sci-Fi Channel, at that time, had filed a lawsuit against NASA to obtain information about the Kecksburg object, presumably, you know, its flight path and where it landed, and some report that NASA had put together. And I don't really know the full background of that story, because usually NORAD would be involved, and and you'd be trying to get information from other agencies as well as the U.S. Army, who was supposedly involved in the retrieving the object. But NASA somehow fits into the picture here, and they were filing suit to get information from them, and NASA replied with basically, you know, well, we don't know much of anything, and what we do is all blacked out. So, you know, they went back and asked a federal judge to make the, you know, make them cough up more information, that this was not sufficient. And there was supposed to be a ruling made on that, and then they would proceed from there. Now, as far as we know, you know, the ruling may or may not have been made. We don't know the status of that, nor do we know the status of the suit itself. We are presuming in our report that we put out on the website page there on Kexburg that the suit funding is no longer available from the Sci-Fi channel to pursue any legal action because NBC bought them. And they just didn't want to spend the money on this particular project.
Well, NBC Universal, section of NBC, lost several million dollars last year. And so that explains it, I think. We'll right. find out. Maybe somebody knows for sure. It's interesting that the fellow that contacted us didn't let up. I mean, he didn't settle with just emails. He called
me. No, there were phone calls several times.
He called me once. And he's a K Street a man, I assume a lobbyist or a lawyer in Washington, well-connected. You would think he would know more than us.
One would think so.
maybe he's trying to find out what we do know.
Or, you know, he said that he was unable to get a response from either Stan or Leslie. And therefore, you know, what do you logically do if you're researching a story? You go to the internet, and he put in Kexburg UFO, and what came up? The Jerry Pippen site.
He was nice enough on the phone, so I'm not insinuating anything.
Right. Except he certainly did want to know what the status was, and we did our best to determine that. We did what we could do. And we went as far as we could go to give him his answer. So that's about where it stands right now, unless we get further input.
Well, and we probably will before it's over. I haven't been able to make contact with Leslie Kane. She's getting our emails, but no response there. We say she's getting them. They're not being bounced.
Right.
But we'll call her this week or soon. Wish her Merry Christmas, and I'll say, by the way, it's a loss of good. Can you believe it's the Christmas season already?
Well, you can tell that by watching TV. Already. You know, Halloween's over, and, you know, actually it's been long over, but, I mean, you know, we're now approaching Thanksgiving, but it's been Christmas on TV for some time.
You know, you're talking about disclosure of things. You've been following this thing by Jan Val Elam down in Brazil, or Elam, one of the way, I'm not sure how he pronounces his name. He's a well-known lecturer.
Right.
And he basically says several ET races are coming to the Earth. They're going to have an official landing.
Right.
He doesn't say where, does he?
Yeah, in other words, this would be official contact, you know, what everybody in ufology, you know, is waiting for, quote, unless you believe that it's already occurred and the government just doesn't want us to know about it. But
well, this one, whether or not that's happened, I believe he's saying this will be a very public
yes,
one.
Yes, in other words, you know, forget about government contact or anything. That hasn't worked out for anybody, so we're coming direct to the people. And, of course, the people these days want to hear things like that. We want to be involved, and we want to make the decision.
Jan put a date on this thing somewhere between now and April 30th.
Well, actually, it was the 16th.
November 16th, he said, but I haven't heard.
Right, November 16th to April 16th, somewhere in that six-month period.
My note says April 30th.
Right? I read April 16th, but whatever.
Okay. This is an email from A.J. Guevara.
Right. Maybe the deadline's been extended a few days. I really don't know. But it seemed me 6 months on the dot. Somewhere in that time frame, one or more ET species will land and announce their presence to the awaiting world. Where they're going to land, that's a good question.
Evidently, this guy is quite well-respected by AJ. He says he used to work with Bob Pratt.
Right. And, of course, Bob did quite a story on the Brazil, quote, UFO invasion that we covered last week on the show, as a matter of fact.
According to, this Jan, there's been contact for a couple of decades, but this is going to be a very public one.
Right. Well, I would suggest that they land on the proverbial can't land on the White House lawn. It's got too many fences and barriers around it, but unless you have a very small craft.
They can go down to Atlanta and land on the CNN lawn.
Well,
or they can land there to Secaucus, New Jersey and land next to MSNBC. They're moving back to Manhattan, by the way. The studios, but, you'd like to see that happen because you're right next door.
Right.
You could go.
We have a big field here. Land here.
Invite them to come in to where you live and have a cup of coffee and start the tape recorder.
Well, we'll see what we can do.
I'm counting on it. If I'm going to be scooped, it better be with my partner.
So, we promised to do some sightings, and we have a lot of goodies here, and I think we're actually going to have about 30 minutes to do them.
Well, then let's get into it. We'll probably have some since Peter Davenport's back reporting.
Right.
In fact, he has a good one, I think, from the Chicago area. We'll get in before the night's over.
Well, actually, we'll get to it very shortly after we do Rick's pick for the week.
Okay, what is Rick's pick?
this comes from Indianapolis and apparently took place there at the racetrack, the Indianapolis Speedway.
Not during the race though.
Well, I don't know for sure when. I think it is right before the race started. And this occurred last Memorial Day in 2005, not this year's, but the prior year's. It occurred on the 29th of May, 2005, at 11:30 in the morning.
Well, the TV cameras were already set up. I wonder why we didn't get some pictures.
I don't know. Let's see what the sighting has to say here, the report. It says a family member and I decided to walk around the outside of the Indy 500 racetrack. We were walking southbound on Georgetown Road on the left side of the street when we overheard people saying, "The stealth is almost here." And of course, that's somewhat traditional on a lot of public events now. They fly stealth bombers or F-117A fighters over the event to start it out. And people were saying, "It's coming, it's almost here," and pointing it out. And I, the witness, could not see the stealth bomber myself yet. I suggested that my cousin and I cross the street to try to catch a better view of the airplane, which does a flyby every year before the Indy 500 race. Anyway, now we are midway between 30th and 26th Streets by the Pepsi parking lot when I can now see the stealth bomber coming straight over Georgetown Road. I looked up over my head and saw what looked like a disc moving like a chrome ringing bell. it hovered in one spot and was blinding, similar to how the sunshine reflects off of chrome. The craft appeared to be higher in altitude than the stealth bomber. As the stealth was approaching the racetrack, the disc, or whatever it was, seemed to be waiting for it. As the stealth was flying under the hovering disc, in other words, this appeared that the disc was above the bomber, the disc seemed to attack the stealth bomber. I could see it hit the stealth airplane from my view. We were right under both aircraft when this occurred. The unknown craft stopped, glistening, and smoked a little as it hit the right wing of the stealth. Then the craft started shining again. The stealth bomber then circled the track one lap and headed west in the direction of the Indianapolis airport. After the impact, the right wing had some smoke coming out of it. Maybe this is normal, but this is the first 12 seconds. But the first 12 seconds was something to see. There was a couple leaving the Pepsi property for the race, the lot parking lot, and the female looked at the disc and said, "Oh, cool." That's pretty casual for a UFO observation. After I saw the smoke coming from the craft, or from the wing of the stealth, I could no longer spot the disc. There were so many people there with camcorders, someone had to have recorded this.
You would think the TV cameras would have.
One would think so.
From you know, telecasting the thing.
Right. But you know how that works. There's always somebody on the button with a 5-second delay.
Well, yeah, but there must be a tape of it someplace.
Yeah, oh, there would be a recording of it. Yeah.
Larry Bryant, get your Freedom of Information request out and find out if there was a stealth bomber with damage on the 29th of May.
2005.
Right. Should be pretty specific. Don't mention UFOs, just see if there was a stealth bomber reporting damage.
Right, after flying over the Indy 500.
Well, they'll have to say that part.
Because then their suspicions will be aroused.
You would think that the TV network broadcasting that would not, they would be playing a rerun after rerun of that.
Well, might be surprised. So, you know, there are certainly instances during TV, you know, remotes where the local stations go out and video something. There have been instances where they caught what appeared to be UFOs during these interviews in the background. It happens occasionally.
Yeah, in fact, maybe one of the channels in Indianapolis has a video.
Might have one. Yeah. I wouldn't rely on one of the networks. No, I'd go to the local station.
Well, the network ought to have it, though. I mean, they ought to have it up close and personal. I don't know why they would not put that on.
Well, it might disturb some people.
Well, I don't think it would. My experience is with the control room of a sports event, especially. You know, the only thing I've heard contrary to that was the ESPN coverage of Bush down at New Orleans, where everybody was booing him. The father Bush.
Daddy.
Yeah,
Bush.
And the ESPN dubbed in cheers.
Proving that these sort of things happen.
Right, right. So, but I mean, I don't know they'd be prepared for a UFO bouncing into a stealth bomber. I mean, on one hand, if that happened, it certainly speaks well of the stealth pilot.
Right.
I mean, he went ahead and did his turn.
Right. Well, I don't think that there was contrary to what the witness stated, I don't think there was necessarily any intent or attack But apparently something happened and the UFO had a little problem and literally ran into the tip, thank goodness, of the wing.
Well, I think the pilot would have noticed it.
Oh, he probably did.
Okay, let's go on to that's Rick's picks.
That's one of the interesting points about the stealth bomber and also the F-117A and many other modern aircraft that have been produced over the last 20 years. They're all fly-by-wire. In other words, they're all run by computers. They literally cannot fly on their own with a pilot at the stick. It needs an assist. And in the case of this kind of incidental damage where maybe just a little piece of the wing got knocked off, at the very tip, like maybe 6 inches or a foot, and a little bit of smoke came out, the computer pilot mechanism there would compensate for that and allow the craft to make it back home safely, which is good.
Okay. I don't know about that report, but Rick always says something interesting.
Well, since it is anecdotal, one always has to ask the question, did somebody make this up? So, having covered that, let's go to something that perhaps has a little more validity because there's some official sources involved.
Now, Rick, what we're doing with Rick Kropman here, folks, is we're not belittling him at all. We're baiting him to go get some backup information on this report. Rick's certainly a bright guy, and he knows how to contact the TV newsrooms. He can probably come up with something.
Right. And he listens to our report. He assures us. So, at any rate, let's get to Mr. Davenport's report here. This is quite interesting. It involves another disc, but this is an incident that occurred on November the 7th of this month. And it occurred at about 4:30 in the afternoon, Central Time, at Chicago O'Hare Airport.
Not too far from Indianapolis, as the crow flies, or the UFO flies, or the airplane flies.
Right. And, of course, the Chicago area has been a hot spot for UFO activity over the past several years. In fact,
I saw a survey last year where it was the number one place reporting the most sightings. Remember that?
Yes, during 2005. That's true, yeah. And I don't know, I guess there'll be another report about who wins the title for 2006. We'll see that right after the first of the year, I guess. So at any rate, here's the report. The National UFO Reporting Center has received the following information from a single source who, for the time being, wishes to remain anonymous and who prefers not to reveal for what entity he works. We have received documentation about the alleged sighting, which satisfies us, i.e. Peter Davenport, as to the veracity of the report and as to the credentials of the party reporting the incident. Now, when Peter uses words like that, he means that he's dealing with a professional, degreed person who works for a specific company or organization. So, this is what you would call an anonymous but official source. We have a delayed release on this case principally because an investigation was begun almost immediately after our receipt of the initial report, and because we are hoping to obtain additional documentation about the sighting before it could be concealed or destroyed. In other words, by the official sources, not the individual, but whoever they were working for. At approximately 4:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday, November the 7th, federal authorities at O'Hare Airport received a report that approximately a dozen witnesses were observing a small, round, disc-shaped object, metallic in appearance, which hovered over C-17 at the airport. In other words, a specific plane gate at the airport, this thing was hovering right over it. The object was first spotted by an employee, presumably airline employee, working on the ramp, who was engaged in pushing back, so indeed an airline employee, Flight 446 departing Chicago for Charlotte, North Carolina. The employee reported to his supervisors that the object appeared to be almost directly above his location at gate C-17, and it appeared to be perfectly round, and that its size was approximately equal in his perception to a quarter held at arm's length. The object had a metallic appearance, according to the first witness, and it appeared to him to be spinning like a top. The first witness apprised the flight crew of Flight 446 on the existence of the object above their aircraft, and we believe both the pilot and the co-pilot were witness to the bizarre object as well. The witness also contacted his supervisors, who also witnessed the object, which was visible for approximately 2 minutes. At the end of that time, the object was seen to suddenly accelerate straight up at a very rapid pace, and it shot through the solid overcast sky. The level of the overcast was at about 1,900 feet at the time. The witness added that the object appeared to leave a hole in the cloud, where it had streaked upwards through the overcast, indicating that it was quite physically solid. I mean, it was a real solid object, not just an illusion of projection or whatever. That's a quite significant observation, to actually see a hole in a cloud cover where a UFO has shot through it. That's pretty good evidence of reality.
Yeah, 1,900 feet was the elevation of the clouds.
Right.
And size of a quarter at arm's length, that'd make it about a 30-foot deal.
One of those 30-foot models, yes, most likely. Now, the report goes on here just to finalize it. Both the Federal Aviation Administration and the Transportation Security Administration were apprised of the event at the time it was occurring, and personnel in one or more of the towers at O'Hare may have witnessed the object, possibly with binoculars. The FAA apparently reported that the object was not visible on radar, although that has not been confirmed at the time of this writing. We hope to be able to release more information about the incident sometime in the near future. In the meantime, we would like to invite anyone who may have been personal witness to the event to submit a report of their sighting using our online report form. We would be most grateful if you would indicate in your report where you were located at the time of the sighting and what the object looked like from your vantage point. So all you have to do, listeners, if you were there near the Chicago airport, at the Chicago airport, witness this object on this date, please go to www.nuforc.com and submit your report. And excuse me, it's not .com, it's .org.
Well, that is an interesting report, no doubt about it.
And another interesting aspect there, besides demonstrating its reality by punching a hole in the cloud, this object, from initial reports, was not reported on radar. And this is one of the things about modern UFO sightings, that they're quite capable of either appearing on radar or making themselves invisible to radar, either one. And this is often reported, whereas back in 1947, Roswell crash, radar. They certainly appeared on radar, and some people even think radar, because it was so much stronger at the time, actually caused a malfunction of that craft.
Lee, you know, we haven't done a lot of Filer's reports, so we do have some time today.
Yeah, we got plenty of time. Plenty of time.
And we always have them displayed, of course, but I guess we can get into those at this point.
Yeah, I would like to point out to our listeners that if you go out to the Tapeter site at newfork.org, is there some other very interesting sightings. He has full reports, and he's also got some drawings and pictures, mainly drawings, of the objects observed. These are very interesting reports occurring throughout the month of October from around the United States. A lot of triangles and boomerangs seen. So you certainly want to do that. Some of these may even show up in the Filer's report, too, as we get into it, which we will right now.
Well, both Peter and George do a great job.
Yes, they do.
And we do have a form. If you want to report a sighting to us, please feel free to do
right.
That.
Okay, well, I'm going to start out, interestingly enough, here in Alaska. We haven't done a report from Alaska in a while. And, of course, lots of stuff going on in the Pacific Northwest in Canada, and it certainly spills over into Alaska. And we have two reports here from Anchorage about a week apart. The first one is a black disc-shaped object which rose from behind a mountain and then stopped and moved quickly to the south against a heavy wind on October the 8th in Anchorage. The witness states, I was smoking outside my apartment. I guess you can't smoke inside in Alaska anymore, right? When I saw this thing, I'd say it was about 30 miles from my house. Well, you know, when you live in Alaska, you could see forever, right? And it was hovering at about 2:02 p.m. in the afternoon. It was a black saucer-shaped disc that appeared to be rotating with a slight wobble. Now, if it was 30 miles away from the witness and he could see a black disc, then this thing had to be absolutely huge. I think it would be more likely that it's probably a few miles away or even less. It rose slowly straight up, slowed almost to a halt, and then moved directly to the right, or to the south, against the wind, which was moving to the north. As it moved south, it passed behind a tree, blocking my view. I ran uphill to get a better view, but it had by then disappeared. Now, you had a black disc on September the 30th, there's a report, just the opposite, a shiny white disc. It was spotted hovering at 2:30 in the afternoon on Saturday, September the 30th. The witness says, while working in my backyard, I looked up and saw a shiny white disc-shaped object above a jet contrail, which was at an altitude of between 30 and 40,000 feet, which is cruising altitude. So in other words, this white disc appeared to be at least 40,000 feet or above. So again, this could have been a rather large disc-shaped object. I mean, not one of the 30-foot models, but something very, very big. This occurred in Alaska, as report, not Arkansas, as reported last week. But we didn't cover it last week, so that was a correction. Two interesting discs in Anchorage. Now we have another disc that made an appearance in California, in Cameron Park. You know where that is?
No.
Well, I don't either.
How's that for an answer?
Right. Pretty
definitive.
So this occurred on October the 29th at 6:12 p.m. The witness was driving north on Cameron Park Drive when he says, "I saw a straight line of bright white lights ahead of me and thought it was a plane landing at the local airport. As I approached, I could see that it was hovering over someone's backyard. As I was almost caught up with it, I could see that it had a very bright set of colored lights surrounding the entire circular edge of the craft. It really looked like big Christmas lights with bright yellow, green, blue, and red bulbs."
You know, we get those reports every once in a while.
Right. I think these were all the colors, yellow, green, blue, and red. The craft had a circular shape in general with pointed ends around it at each different colored light. In other words, lights were sort of like out on almost attachments on the edge of this circular craft. I estimated that it was close to 17 to 25 feet in diameter. It continued to hover for about a half a second and then moved seemingly parallel to the ground over my car and then on to the other side of the road. All the time I could see the circle of very big bright lights, and then it was just gone, just disappeared. It made no noise. The witness states, "I am a graduate nursing student. I've never seen anything like this before."
And that's Cameron Park.
Right.
Wherever that is in California.
Now we have a few, we've had a number of disc sightings. Now we'll do a few triangle sightings. The first report comes from Boulder, Colorado, interestingly enough.
The home of Jane Swartley. And the summer home of Paula Harris.
Jane, you missed another one.
She was too busy inside editing.
I told her, go out and keep your eyes to the skies.
Well, we had her in working on some show.
I'm sure we did. Yeah, this was October the 19th at 6:50 p.m. Denver, or Boulder time. And here's the report from the witness. And so this particular triangular craft was very similar in appearance, apparently, to, you know, the famous Belgian triangles, which appear all the time. It's not like they appeared in Belgium and they don't appear anymore. It's very frequently this type of craft is seen all over the world. The white, bright, bright, but not bright enough to hurt one's eyes, just, you know, but very visible, white lights on each corner and a red light in the center, or sometimes it'll be red with a white light in the center of it, of the red area. So this is one of those type of craft. At any rate, this occurred at 6:50 p.m. on October the 19th, and the report says a child and two adults were sitting in a hot tub. They do that in Boulder too, huh? On a cold, partly cloudy night. The 10-year-old boy looked up and pointed at an object and screams, and I'm not going to scream, folks. I don't do screams. "What's that?" The adults looked, but didn't see anything. He said it was flying to the south. The child said, "I just saw a UFO," and he jumped up and ran inside, scared to death. A few minutes later, as the adults talked about how scared he looked, the child slowly comes back out, and as we say, come back in, it was probably just a shooting star. He points back up and says, "There it is." And we all looked up and saw a huge V-shaped triangle making made up of a reddish, dull, illuminated section, which was flying to the north. It was flying low and silent and about 1,000 feet up. We were all in shock, and after a few minutes of staring at the sky, we all went inside in amazement. The boy said when it first came by, it was rounded in the front, not V-shaped, and had more lights and was flying lower. Well, I think actually they saw two different objects.
Yeah.
Not the same one reappearing. So probably two triangles flying over Boulder that night, Jane.
Well, you're probably right, or the same one came back in reverse.
And changed his shape slightly. Yeah. Which sometimes they do.
Anyway, that's an interesting sighting.
Well, we have another triangle from Hudson, Florida. The witness stated, I was working in my backyard at around 4 p.m. on October the 23rd on a clear, sunny day with no air traffic noted. I heard a slight humming noise above and behind me to the east. I felt more than heard the hum. In other words, it like vibrated the man's body. And it seemed to increase in intensity slightly, which caught my attention. Then the hairs on my arms and head started to rise like static charge when you rub a balloon on your head.
I've never done that.
You never rubbed a balloon on
no.
your head? You don't know what you're missing, Jerry.
Okay, so the hair stood on here.
I don't have any hair to rise anymore on the top. So I guess I'm missing out too. I looked up to see what was going on. The hum was directly over my head. When I looked up, I did not see a craft or a cloud or anything. What I did see was like a soap bubble. The more I looked, I could make out that there was three triangular shapes that seemed to displace the air. It seems like something in the process of materializing, so to speak, here, or becoming visible. Maybe it was cloaked and now it's becoming visible. It seems like the triangles were reflecting or bending the light around them. Yeah, well, that sounds more like a cloaking situation. It was like looking at the sky through a soap bubble. Triangles were definite, but only because the sky around them seemed to be bent or displaced. The triangles were moving in a westerly direction towards the Gulf of Mexico, and this took about 3 minutes. They were moving slowly in a straight line in a V formation. So you've got three triangles in a V formation. The static feeling seemed to increase in intensity as it got closer to me and was very strong when the objects were directly over my head and decreased gradually as they moved away from me. I'm not really sure if it was a UFO, but it was something that I have never experienced before. Well, it's a UFO because you couldn't identify it. And it was flying.
Have you heard those reports of the static electricity?
Occasionally.
But this one seemed to be longer than most. I mean, they...
And much mm-hmm. more intense. But remember, there were three triangles.
Well, I guess
in the formation.
We have time for one more.
Okay. Let's see. Let's do another disc. We were up in Alaska. Let's go to Hawaii for our...
Yeah, I mean, give them equal time.
Right.
Say two extra states.
This is from Anahola, Hawaii. The report states for 3 hours on October the 21st at 3 p.m., my 8-year-old daughter and her friend had a sighting and an interaction with a UFO in Hawaii. The two girls were sleeping in our screen room and were awakened by a strong wind and a loud crashing noise. they saw what they think might have been a meteor shower. Then they saw a hovering saucer with lights. It made a huge mechanical noise, like a public safety siren for a while. Well, if you ever heard a siren, you know, like they have sirens out there for the tidal wave warnings, mm-hmm. tsunami warnings, and they're saying that it sounded similar to that, interestingly enough. Then it stopped, and it finally left. Immediately, a red group of laser-like lights entered the room and focused on the children. They were not able to touch themselves or each other. They heard themselves talk, but couldn't hear the other person. The old zone of silence, very personalized. In other words, they could hear themselves talking, but they couldn't hear the other child. You know, I mean, they couldn't hear each other. The light left, and they felt induced to sleep, and woke up about an hour or so later, bumping their heads. Strange behavior. They saw lights on the mountain about a mile away, then flashing, swirling lights in the adjacent sky. These girls exhibit no indication of a prank or collusion. They both remember having a vivid dream prior to being awakened the first time, and then again the same dream during the brief sleep. Different dreams, but both dreamed the identical dream twice. I believe her story.
I wonder what the dream was.
They're not specific. She will not sleep by herself tonight. Now, this is the parent talking. She insists on sleeping with her parents. Now, what was the content of the dream? I'm sure that the child probably relayed some of it, although, you know, sometimes people wake up from a dream and they instantly don't remember really what it was, just that maybe it was strange.
Well, it's a strange way to end the show. Instead of keeping your eyes to the sky and watching out for flying saucers, we're talking about laser lights and zones of silence.
And dreams. Well, keep your dream eyes to the skies.
Yeah, watch out for those flying saucer dreams. Good night.
Good night.
I'm a spaceman, and I just got in from space. A spaceman, I'm looking for the human race. A spaceman, I heard a whisper, it was here. I'm a spaceman.